You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is Gilbert Gottfried, and this is Gilbert Gottfried's amazing colossal podcast. This is
Colossal Obsessions.
This is Gilbert.
Take it from the top.
Hi, this is Gilbert Gottfried, and I've already made a mistake, and we're only 3 seconds into the show. And I'm here with my co-host, Frank Santopadre, and this is Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions.
It is.
And we're doing an unusual show. It concerns Jews who write TV comedy.
Is there any other?
That'll be a 9-hour show. That'll be a 28-hour show.
Yeah. It's odd because we just did a Twilight Zone, and this is really...
let's introduce our two legendary guests. Mr. Bill Persky is here in the studio.
Hello, guys.
All our listeners know Bill. He's done, 42 of these, I think?
This is my fourth.
It's his fourth show.
And I would like to apologize for the second. I listened to it, and it was very informative, but not much fun.
It really was.
It's like a redo. It's like I did a commencement address at a college, and it was brilliant, but somehow I went to the wrong microphone, and my script wasn't there, and I was lost. But they brought me back, and I was a hit.
Well, you're always...
I always apologize.
You don't have to. You're always a hit here.
My first marriage, no apology.
And who's our second guest on the phone, Gil?
Arnie Kogan.
The legend.
The legend, Arnie Kogan.
Arnie.
Hi. It's been about a year since I talked to you guys. Almost exactly a year since we did that Father's Day episode.
We did a Father's Day episode with you and your brilliant son, Jay. Would you like to apologize for your episode as well?
No, but I want to apologize for Bill's second show.
You know something? The Writers Guild took a vote. They were embarrassed by me.
Before we get to our subject,
yes,
a man we are here to pay tribute to.
Oh, my goodness.
Who was a mutual friend of both you and Arnie. You and Arnie have history, too.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It's been about 43 or 44 years since I've seen you or spoken to you.
Yes. And I really wanted it to keep going, Arnie. I was really pissed off.
It's about 10 years too soon. I wanted to make it 50-something
years. What was the last thing we did?
Well, I did Lots of Luck for you with Dom DeLuise.
I did another episode
of the Montefuscos with you.
Which, again, so many. And I'll tell you something.
Yeah.
Tim was in a pilot that and I did that was considered so funny that Grant Tinker and the whole company there said, we're not sending in a comedy. It was called The Boys, and it was hilarious. Well, we'll get into it.
Yes, I just wanted to know how you guys...
here's the main thing. You know, Bill and Sam Denoff hired me for a show called The Funny Side in 1971.
Sure.
And I want to thank you, Bill and Sam. The show was really good, but that was a series where there were a lot of great writers on the staff. You put me in a room with a writer named Pat McCormick.
Yes.
Uh-oh.
That's the first time I really met Pat. And he got to be my partner for a while.
Yes.
And it was an incredible experience. You know, it was like you said, Arnie, why don't you work with Pat? It was like taking a union electrician and putting in with Thomas Edison. I was frightened. He was like a rock star. It was a great experience.
And who on the show or on the line wants to tell the Pat McCormick story?
Which one?
The one with the Tim Conway as the punchline. Well, save it for the end, Gil.
Okay.
Let's talk about the great man that we are here to honor.
Well, I can start because Sam and I wrote the first thing that Tim ever did on network television.
Tell us.
Was doing the Steve Allen show back in 1962, and Steve found this guy. There's an argument about whether Rosemarie found him or Steve. Maybe she introduced him to Steve. Anyway, he was in Cleveland doing local stuff.
Yeah.
And he
with
came
Ernie
out.
Anderson.
Yeah.
Right.
And on that same show, Steve introduced the Smothers Brothers.
Wow.
So Conway comes in and we say, have a great bit for you to do. It's going to be, you're going to be the protocol guy at the White House. And I said, and you're going to be introducing people and doing all the things. I said, and one of the things you're going to be doing is that you got a letter from the Shah of Zolzain. And so you write back, dear Zolzain Shah. And he stared at me, which most people do. Zolzain Shah in Jewish is shut up. I always wanted to do that. And after that, Tim said, yeah, well, I think I'm going to do this instead.
He wasn't Jewish, obviously.
I'm Jewish, and I didn't know that.
Oh, see? It's amazing I got this far.
Arnie, how did you and Tim meet for the first time?
Well, we met before the Burnett Show a number of times, but the Burnett Show was when we really got together, and, you know, of course, he was incredible. He was a comedy genius, and but ever since the Burnett Show, I worked on a number of things with Tim, so he was, as we all know, one of the most naturally funny people ever to exist, you know. I have never seen audiences laughing and falling on the floor, gasping for breath, as they did when Tim did a bit, maybe except for perhaps Captain Tennille, the second season.
There was a second season?
but not Shields and Yarnell, right, Arnie?
Not Shields and Yarnell.
Yeah.
No.
Well, Bill alluded to, he started out not a lot of people know, he started out in morning TV in Ohio with Ernie Anderson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't know this till I did the research, until he got dismissed. Conway got fired by the station. And what broke up the act is what led Ernie Anderson. They said, do you want to do a horror show? And that's how he became Goulardi.
Oh,
really?
So Tim inadvertently had a role in that. In you know, one of Ernie Anderson's, probably his famous, most iconic character. But somehow he got to the Steve Allen show, and that's a little shrouded in mystery, as you say.
Yeah, well, the thing about the Steve Allen show, it's Sam and I, it's our first job, 1961. Had a 3-week guarantee, $500 a piece. Had to move to California or not. And, you know, I had a job at, we were working at WNEW Radio, not for a lot of money.
Morning World.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And we said, this is the chance. Did I tell you about the 10 pounds of material that got that job?
Yeah, you
oh,
have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank God. Well, yeah. I'm losing a little bit.
I don't think that's true.
I didn't listen to my last episode. Anyway.
I heard 8 pounds of material.
But no, well, it lost some in transit. Right. Anyway, the show, we were going to be picked up for 3 weeks, and another 3 weeks, and another 3 weeks. And we were hanging by a thread. And then we came up with a joke in the third week that Steve loved so much that he picked us up for the whole season. And they got canceled the next week.
Oh,
so
we but you did
26 weeks.
You did meet Conway.
Absolutely. And then he got us a McHale's Navy.
I was going to say, he was instrumental in getting you and Sam that McHale's Navy
which,
strip.
Which, incidentally, letter for Fuji. Remember the show? There was that Japanese prisoner that they had, and he was very homesick.
He doesn't.
So they decided that he had to write a letter to his mother. But they had to mail it from a Japanese camp. Like life. Like, you know, we always dealt with real life. Anyway, apropos of that, 3 weeks ago, I got a check for 33 cents.
You're still getting McHale's Navy residual check.
Yes, but it's always hard because I have to split with my first wife. And 33 cents is hard. I always give her the extra pennies. Not worth the aggravation.
I've never seen McHale's Navy. I got to start watching. I've never really seen McHale's Navy.
Oh, God.
Now you have a reason.
Who played the Japanese prisoner?
I don't know.
Not Jack Sue.
No. What was the joke that got you hired again on the Steve Allen show, the great joke?
Well, there was a show called Ben Casey about Dr. Zorba. Well, who played?
Sam Jaffe.
Yeah. Right.
He was also Gunga Din in a diaper.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. He didn't wear a diaper.
Most famously.
He was the head of the hospital.
And the High Lama, he was in Lost Horizon.
Yes. And whatever happened to him?
He's gone.
Anyway, the start of the Ben Casey show was there was a blackboard, and Dr. Zorba would come out with a pointer, and there were these stick figures.
Wait. Birth, death, I think, is it birth, death, infinity, or the
man, woman, birth, death, infinity. And then the show we go. So we did a sketch about that, and a great comic by the name of Joey Foreman.
One of the
great mimic. And he played Dr. Zorba, and Steve was Ben Casey. And anyway, so he did. This is the sign for man. This is the sign for woman. This is birth. This is death. This is infinity. And this is a pussycat. And there was a little chalk figure of a pussycat. Steve, at the reading, started to laugh, and he couldn't breathe. And then he said, "You picked up for the season."
Nice.
Whoa.
Right there.
Whoa.
Nice.
Now, here's something to ask both of you. Were Tim Conway and Harvey Korman friends offstage?
They were. Not tremendously close, but they were close enough. And they were, you know, they were friends. Tim was the, when Harvey died about 5-6 years ago, Tim was the sort of the master of ceremonies at his memorial at a place out in Pacific Palisades. So they were friendly, yes.
But I would say this about Tim, and I think you'll agree, Arnie.
Yeah.
As much, I worked 1,000 times with Tim.
Yeah.
And we were close, we laughed, but I never really knew anything about him.
No, you don't know anything. He was always on off stage, always funny, always on. I think I saw.
So you say that he and Harvey close as you could get to Tim. There's only one guy I know, and that's Ron Clark, who really was a friend to him.
Yeah,
he didn't let you in, you know.
You're saying the same thing that Bill is saying, right? He was sort of was that something to do with being a Midwesterner? You think
being funny
that was him.
He was just funny, and Clark did a beautiful job at the memorial for Conway about 3 weeks ago. There were four speakers. Newhart was one of them. Ron Clark was another one. Ron was brilliant. He just covered a lot of stuff about Tim.
Because he knew what Tim really felt, I think.
Yeah.
He was the only one.
Yeah. Well, he was, speaking of McHale's Navy, I mean, he was friends with Borgnine, too, for life.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But
I'm not sure he got to know him any better.
But even that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Tim for 30, 40 years. I've written hundreds of things for him. And were we friends? Yeah. But were we friends?
No. Yeah, fascinating. Yeah. I feel about Gilbert.
that way with me and my wife. Same kind of thing. Doesn't really know me.
It's funny how they teamed up Conway and Borgnine for SpongeBob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got to do that late in life. Arnie, what's the first thing you wrote for him? Do you have a vivid memory of it?
I think it was on the Burnett show. I just did a whole bunch of stuff. He became a regular after a few years, but he was on a show before that. It may have been the fireman sketch, when the world's oldest fireman.
Classic.
You know, it's all almost 70% Tim. You just write old fireman. But I wrote the sketch, and it was very, very funny. And just writing the direction, Tim is the old fireman, tries to break through the window, and he took about 20 minutes to break through a window as the old man. He had the axe, and he slowly broke through, and it was hysterical to see his hand moving. And Harvey was there as a rich man saying, "Oh, my paintings, my scarves, you got to save me." And that was basically the sketch. But they ended up doing mouth-to-mouth resuscitations at the very end.
That's a great one.
And it was very funny. So
it's one
that may have been the first thing.
Yeah, yeah. Bill, I'm just trying to track your career. You did the Steve Allen show with him. Then he helped you go to McHale's Navy.
Now, here's the other side of the McHale's Navy. We also simultaneously had gotten to do a Van Dyke show.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a meeting on our script from McHale's Navy with a lovely, lovely guy by the name of Cy Rosen. Did you ever work with him, Arnie?
No.
Lovely man.
Yeah.
But forever. We had a 30-page script. We went in at 9 o'clock. We finished at 4. 30 pages.
Wow.
Every note. You use the word and he said, did you really have to use
hypercritical,
and,
huh?
And, yeah. I don't know. It was just, we went to lunch. There was a Chinese restaurant across from Universal. And I said, we got to go home. I'm going back. Maybe we can get the jobs back because we can't do this. Because it was very hard to go. I don't know about you, Arne. Very hard to go from Variety to situation comedy.
It's a change.
You know, they won't let you in. It's like, it's hard to go from the television or the movies to the theater, or it used to be.
But you did it. And when you guys got on the Van Dyke show, you and Sam, Tim was still in your orbit?
Yes, but the same day when we got back to our office from Cy Rosen, we had an office at the end of a hall. It was too small. I had to sit in the hall and Sam type. We got a call from Carl. Sam picked it up. And he just said, it's Carl. And I'm in the hall. And he said, well, yeah, when? Oh, yeah, what? Wow. And I said, what? He said, Carl loved it. We can write as many as we want, and he's going to give us an office. That was in the same day.
Great day.
Yeah.
So we never went back to that Chinese restaurant. It was bad luck.
So when did you hook up with Tim again?
Let's see, a number of times. I think the first real thing was when I did Roll Freddy Roll, which was a movie.
TV
of
movie,
the week. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
And I think this says a lot about Tim. It was a movie about a guy who, through a series of events, ends up on roller skates to impress his kid. He's going for the world record of being on roller skates. So for a whole week of his life, he's on roller skates. Tim, I mean, he got into stuff. There was a thing that lasted for 20 minutes that we had to cut down of him trying to open a heavy glass door. Everything. Then he jumped off a curb and got caught in a sewer. I mean, he played tennis, everything. At the end, there was a sequence where the press was coming to, he had broken the record, and people were closing in on him. And he backed up, and he started to go down a hill.
Yeah. It's on YouTube. I watched it today.
Yeah. So we went downtown. There was one thing in it where he actually rode up on the back of a moving motorcycle and grabbed the guy. Another thing where he was going down a hilly street, and he was out of control, and there was a guy with a push broom. He grabbed it, hooked it around a light pole, and went across the street. Then there was a sequence of him supposed to go down this hill, and the stuntman wouldn't do it. And Tim said, I'll do it.
Wow.
Literally, there was smoke coming out of the thing. Now, we get in the car to go home, and we're sitting and having a beer. And I said, Timmy, I got to be honest with you. Until today, I didn't know if I could shoot a stunt sequence. He said, that's nothing. I didn't know if I could roller skate.
Oh, he didn't take any roller skating lessons or training?
Whatever. He just did. Well, he was a great, you know, he was going to be a jockey.
Yeah, I know he loved the horses.
Well, he used to be an exercise boy.
Yeah. He's an incredible physical comedian. We talked about it at the memorial. He could roll down a stairway funnier than anybody ever rolls down a stairway. And then he also rolled up
he
a
rolled
stairway.
Up a stairway.
He rolled up a stairway.
You're watching, even watching Roll Freddy Roll today on YouTube, you're looking at a guy, and I'm thinking, this guy could have been a silent film comedian.
Absolutely.
He has some Keaton chops.
You know,
they talked about that also. Keaton, Chaplin, and Conway, and Ron Clark mentioned that if Tim had lived 30 years earlier, he would have been one of them. Maybe he would have been the best of the three. He was incredible with physical stuff, you know.
So when you wrote something for him, Arnie, when you wrote something like the fireman sketch, I mean, did you just write sort of Tim physical business goes here and leave?
No, I wrote the directions like he tries to break through a window, or he gives mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. You write a complete script, and you know you all know that the dress show, he'd do everything according to the script. And on the second show, on the air show, they'd let him loose. If he got it on dress, didn't matter what he did on air, and he would be incredibly funny, and whatever he did, he did. There are things like you do a slave ship sketch. Harvey's got on a slave ship attached to a guy with chains. The guy, after 6 years, quits or dies. Bring in the new guy, and Tim hobbles in, chain him up to Harvey, and he says, "Hi, I'm a leper." That was the opening line I wrote, but since anything from there is gold, he's just... Tim is comedy gold. You just give him anything, and he makes it that much, much funnier.
The other person who does that now,
who?
Well, people always say, "Who's the funniest person you ever worked with?" And really, it's between Tim and Dick Van Dyke, as far apart as they are in terms of the level of stuff they do.
Both physical and
physical,
their own way.
Though,
I mean, Dick, you couldn't think ahead of what Dick might do with something, you know?
Yeah.
Same way with Conway. I mean, we did a show where he was trying to break the world record for a disc jockey staying awake, and he was in a department store window. It was before he got his job on Alan Brady. And there was a place like at the 75th hour where he was talking to this woman, and he had a cup of coffee, and he put it down, and it was on a turntable. He spent 10 minutes... We cut it down. Every time he grabbed for it, it was an originally hysterical piece of business. And Tim, I don't want to say that there was an elegant of style and class that Van Dyke had. I think that there was a certain dignity in Dick's humor. Tim would do anything.
Anything you gave him. He never questioned a piece of material. He would just kind of...
I never heard him question. He might have.
Only Zoltan Shah. I think that was the only one.
He ran with it.
I
mean,
I hold a record.
He did 20 minutes on a doorknob, just sitting on straddling a doorknob on one sketch. Just sitting on a doorknob. You know, since I left the Burnett Show, I often think of Conway sketches. I see, the world's oldest tennis ball boy.
Oh, you see the ones you never wrote.
Yeah, I never wrote. Benihana Chef. I was at the Bed Bath & Beyond last week, which gives you an idea of my lifestyle right now.
Working or buying?
They have these two staircases, escalators going down, one for the customer and one for his cart. I don't know if you've seen that, adjoining escalators. So I figured, I said Conway could do 25 minutes with this. Just with escalators.
I'm sure.
Well, the other thing about him was socially.
Yeah.
I mean, he came to dinner at my house a number of times, but one night was Carl Reiner and Tim and I don't remember, a whole group of people. And my then wife, I don't know how you say that. It's like, how do you say my oldest friend? That doesn't mean he's your old. I've never figured out how you say that. My then wife had bought these porcelain dishes that were like placemats, but they were like 14 inches across.
Uh-huh.
And we're having dinner, and Tim is distracted. And after about 5 minutes of him not saying anything or anything, Carl said, "You all right, Timmy?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, what is it?" He said, "I don't know if I can still do it." And Carl said, "Do what?" He said, "Well, I used to be able to put a plate this size in my mouth." Carl said, "Why?" He said, "I don't know. It was there." He said, "I'm going to try it." So now he's got this 14-inch plate, and he starts loosening up the sides of his mouth and trying, and he's not ready. 20 minutes. He was totally committed. He really thought he could do it. And finally, Carl got up and said, "I have to leave or I'm going to die." That was He said, I can't laugh anymore. But I mean, that was just, and then a night at Carl's, he went to the men's the bathroom, and you know those little hands, those little copper hands, you put paper towels in them and stuff.
Right, right. Sure.
Tim came out with his fly down and those hands coming out of his jacket. And he said, I'm really embarrassed. He said, but I can't see. And he then, with these hands, kept trying to zip up his fly. And finally, Carl reminded me of this last night. I forgot this part of it. Finally, he was so embarrassed. He said, I can't stay. And he went out to the pool. And on the way, he picked up a log and then stood at the pool like he was peeing in the pool. I mean,
anything for a laugh.
I mean, it never, I don't think he ever planned anything. Do you, Arne? I mean, it just happened.
Yeah, no, it's very natural for him. It's just very natural. You know, after the Burnett show, the thing I may have mentioned to you guys, that there was a show called Ace Crawford, Private Eye.
Oh, sure. Yeah, in 83.
Four episodes. Yeah, about early 80s. And Ron Clark was running the show, I think, and Rudy DeLuca was there, and Ron Friedman.
Oh, yeah, we just had Ron this week.
Was Bobrick on that?
Bobrick, no, it was the four of us. Uh-huh. And so we each did an episode, and it was a bumbling Private Eye. My episode involved him getting involved in a murder at a dry cleaner's. So I went to the Encino dry cleaners to do research, to check out the dry cleaning. I knew the owner. And I went there, and I said, is the owner there? And the lady behind the counter said, no. The young lady, I said, no. I said, well, I'm doing a sketch about dry cleaning. I want to check the back. She said, I'm not going to let you go back there. I said, why not? She said, I'm doing a screenplay about dry cleaning.
Welcome to Los Angeles.
Everybody else really is doing a script. She was doing a dry cleaning screenplay.
Did you experience Tim doing that kind of weird business like Bill's talking about off camera?
We had an anniversary party about 10 years ago, big party at a hotel. Conway was there. Other people were there. We had a piano player sitting there playing standard tunes. Tim got up, sat on top of the piano player's lap, and played about 5 minutes of music on his lap.
Hilarious.
Carl said, I'll have us. He wanted to do this with us.
Oh, yeah. We were going to just tell our listeners we were going to have Carl Reiner on.
So I talked to him last night. He said, but I'll tell you a Conway story.
Yeah.
He said he was at a dinner party somewhere, and Tim was very late. And he came in and he said, really, I'm so sorry I'm late. I hate being late. He said, but the freeway was so crowded. I mean, the cars were barely moving. I couldn't imagine what it was. And finally, I got there, and there was this horrible accident, and it was my wife was in the car, and there were a lot of attendants around her. I figured, well, she was okay. I had to get here, but it made me late.
Dark. Artie, this is something that always intrigued me, was how many series flops, and he had a great sense of a self-deprecating sense of humor about it.
Yeah.
Like after McHale's Navy, I mean, who remembers Rango?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
In 67. Well, and then he did the Tim Conway show with Joe Flynn. I guess they tried to recreate that magic.
Well, he had a license plate that said 13 weeks. He had a personalized,
that's what
personalized
I meant.
Plate. At that time, that was a horrible thing. And now,
but
it's
I don't think he ever reached 13 weeks.
Yeah, he just had 13 weeks. He was hoping for 13 weeks.
Yeah, what was the Tim Conway show with Joe Flynn? They ran an airline? They ran a cheapo airline?
I'm not sure. It may have been. I'm not sure what it was.
And Harvey Bullock created Rango, who I think is a guy you must have worked with.
Yeah, I worked with him.
Both
Bullock
of you.
And he had a partner, Harvey Bullock and something else. I forgot who the other guy was.
I forgot, too.
I'm all confused now. Was Tim Conway connected with Turn On?
Turn On, you bet. It's the next thing on my list.
The biggest failure of all time on TV.
One episode and done. Yeah.
Connected with what show?
Turn On. George Schlatter's Turn On.
Really? I didn't know that.
It didn't last an entire episode.
Yeah. What was it?
It was George Schlatter.
George Schlatter's follow-up to Laugh-In.
And in like in a commercial break, they canceled it, and it just didn't come back.
Well, Schlatter told us they canceled it before it went across the country. Before it moved from the New York time slot to the West Coast time slot, yeah. It was canceled somewhere over St. Louis.
Yeah, it was not good.
Chuck McCann was in it.
But I think it was in color, so we're okay. It was in color.
So, yeah, for a talented guy, I mean, after McHale's Navy, he had a hard time latching on to something successful.
It's also hard to be a star. He was an incredible second banana, brilliantly funny, but if you star in your own show, it's a different kind of thing.
Absolutely, yeah.
He had to be less funny to be the star of his own show, and he couldn't be less funny.
The biggest heartbreak that he says, because, you know, when I would call him occasionally, we talk, he said, I still can't believe the boys.
You, Tim, and Herb Edelman.
Sammy. And Sam. And it was about us, about comedy writers. And in comedy writers, whether they were 90 or 12, they were called the boys.
Send in the boys.
To the point where there was a time when one of the guys was sick and his partner went to have the meeting and the producer said, boys, I mean, it was like, that's who you were. So we wrote this thing. And did you ever see it, Arn?
I never saw it. No.
It was supposed to be him and Harvey, but
have a DVD of it in my house. So I'll send it to you.
The wedding scene at the end is,
he steals it.
Oh my God. It was people literally, the whole MTM group saw the pilot and they said, well, why send anything in to compete
and
with
that
this?
That was a disappointment for him.
It broke his heart. It broke mine too. I mean, we just had so much fun doing it. And we never could figure out why. And 5 years ago, I mean, this is what, 20, 30 years afterwards, I get a call from a guy whose name I'll leave out, but he was drunk. And he said, I've been walking around with this guilt for all these years.
Really?
He said, I was in the research department with another guy I won't mention. And he said he lied about the research because he hated you and Sam.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, Jesus.
He lied about the research. He said it was, people loved it, but he couldn't stand the thought that you guys would have that show.
That's horrible.
I'm going to look him up and sue him.
The guilt led to his drinking?
No. Yeah.
All the other guys.
The assistant drinking.
I see. You know, Arnie, it's interesting, too, because people think of him as always having been on the Burnett Show, but that wasn't the case.
He was not, no. I came in 72, he came in like 74, but he had been doing the show for a few years. People also, even as physical as he was, he had incredible timing verbally also. If you watch those Tudball and Mrs. Wiggins sketches,
great.
Mr. Tudball, he waits for just the right second before speaking. He lets her speak. And then he waits for the exact right moment. He was incredible at his timing.
What's the most interesting conversation you had with him?
not serious.
There,
I don't know.
There is
not.
We were friends. I mean,
I met him. I worked on the Mark Twain Prize with him. And I dropped your name, and he was a little bit.
There's like a wall there.
Yeah, but willing to perform for a stranger.
Oh God!
Willing
to
entertain me within 5 minutes of
meeting. But that's all he was able to do in terms of having contact with you.
Which Mark Twain show?
I worked on the Carol Burnett Mark Twain. I was one of the writers on that show, and I didn't know you yet, Arnie, but I knew Bill, and I certainly dropped Bill's name, and
He was
He was very warm and gracious.
Yeah, nice
but
guy.
Even
very
in rehearsals, and we spent a fair amount of time together. But it was tough to sort of break through anything. He seemed perfectly pleasant and sweet.
I spent 5 days with him in Vegas working on an act, and we had great. I can't remember a thing other than what we did.
Yeah,
you know the writing.
Yeah.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You know, the Arnie, I was watching today, too. I don't know if you were one of the writers on this one, Lyle Wagner is the POW, and he's the interrogator.
The Hitler hand puppet.
You know this, Gilbert?
My son Jay sent that to me. It was just incredible.
Incredible timing.
Incredible timing. The German, Harvey and Tim were both very funny, but it was, you know, you fall down on the floor, you're gasping for breath. The guy was incredible when he got rolling on like that.
Yeah.
There were other sketches he did. Almost any sketch he was involved in. There was a thing that Gene Parrott and Bill Richmond wrote called the No Frills Airline. And basically it's coach in his first class. Harvey's in first class. Tim is a row behind him in coach.
Oh, yes.
Oh, God,
and he's taunting Harvey. He says, you paid more money and it's the same ride and so forth. So things start to happen. The stewardess, Carol, comes out and gives safety instructions. She whispers them to Harvey, does not tell Tim what they are. That's the first thing. And then later on there was turbulence in the car, in the plane. Turbulence only in Tim's section. And he did about 5 minutes of turbulence. He was hysterical. And there's a lot of sketches they do that people don't talk about. They talk about the dentist sketch, which is brilliant.
Also incredible. He shoots himself with the Novocaine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that's classic. I always thought that, I knew Tim was involved in the writing, and I always thought that Roger Beatty was involved, who writes that kind of thing for Tim. It seems that Kenny Soames and Gail Parent, were involved in the writing of that sketch.
Gail Parent was the one behind, I think she created the Tim Conway show, the one where he and Joe Flynn ran the airline.
Oh, that could have been.
Who knew him, including his grocer, wrote a show for him. You know, just wanted to. You wanted to work with them.
You know, we have two people here. We have Craig Bierko, our pal, is in the next booth, and he has a sweet little Tim Conway, just a little Tim Conway anecdote that I wonder if he'd tell on mic. Craig?
Sure.
You want to tell it? Yeah. Here he comes.
All right.
We'll tighten this up.
I'll sing till he gets... Oh, here.
Go ahead.
Hey, how are you?
I'll
put the cans on.
Use my mic.
Tell your little Tim Conway story, Craig, because it's sweet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was kidding. I don't have a Tim Conway story.
No, you do.
The first thing is, it's one of my earliest memories was watching the Carol Burnett Show. If I got to go to my grandmother, my Nana Stephanie's house, and stay up late to watch Carol Burnett. Test. That was a big deal. And the only thing that was slightly funnier was that when he came out and did the old man walk, was my grandmother's laugh, which it was, she couldn't breathe. She would repeat anything he said and then get the honk. And if you got the honk, that was big. And the only people who ever made her honk was, it was Tim Conway doing the old man and Carol O'Connor calling Meathead a Pollock.
She loves her Polish.
Yeah. But the story that I had was, and this just made me fall in love with him even more, because I thought this was so kind. I came across, sometimes if I'm having a tough day, there are a couple of go-to people, you know. And he's one of them. I'll just have to watch something on him. He cheers me up immediately. And I came across that tape of him when they're announcing the nominees for the Emmy Awards.
Oh, sure.
And they say the nominees are Tim Conway. He gets up and just starts walking to the stage. And it brings it was the bravest, purest. That would be edgy today. And I saw that and I just thought, God, that's incredible. And I just found him on Twitter and I just said, you are my president. And and he wrote me right back on Twitter and he said, I'm going to speak to President Nielsen, who I did a movie with where he played the president. I'm going to speak to President Nielsen, and if he's okay with it, I want you to be my running mate. And it wasn't much of a premise, but we kept it going for a while, and I got to jam with Conway.
That's nice.
I think I could have told it better, but it was really great to visit with you guys. You were staring at me like, who? You don't know who I am.
No.
You took my microphone.
You were a stranger, and he responded to you.
Isn't that amazing?
I heard
that he's always been that kind, and I've never heard a bad story about him.
We never have either.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me come in. And there's a dinner, right?
Thanks.
Okay, great.
That was sweet, Craig.
Food, right? Thanks.
Could you wrap it up and get out of here now?
I thought it was worth people hearing it.
Okay.
You knew my son. You know my son, Jay.
I do know him. I've known him for a long time. He's always been very kind to me. I'm so sick of hearing about your grandson.
Oh, how? Yeah.
It's endless.
All the stuff he does, yeah.
Oh, no. But, my God, I've been sitting there. You are absolutely hilarious. I hope I get to meet you one day.
He's very talented. My grandson's very talented, mostly music, but also comedy. So
yes.
A lot of stuff.
What happened with Jay? I guess it skips a generation.
No,
Jay, I mean, he's a hilarious, and he's always been very supportive of me.
He's a great kid.
Yeah.
He's a great kid.
It's a pleasure to
you were talking about the Emmy Awards. One year, I think it was 74, Harvey and Tim were both nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
Oh, yeah.
And Harvey won. He got up on stage. Right. Tim got up on stage right next to him. As Harvey made his speech, Tim just stood there next to him on stage.
Oh, my God.
Fantastic. You know, it was a nice tribute, Arnie. I saw that the city of Arcadia just celebrated Tim Conway Day, and they named a race after him because I know he hung out at the racetrack.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
They named a race after him at Santa Anita, the Tim Conway Dorf Half Cup.
Dorf, let's.
They shot a horse in his honor. It's not going well in Santa Anita right these days.
I thought this was sweet too, Bill. I read an interview with Charlene with his widow, of 35 years.
Yeah.
And she said that he was such a humble person that he was shocked and surprised when anybody knew. When other celebrities were familiar with him,
absolutely.
Familiar with his work, which is stunning to me.
Yeah. I think it's because his father never recognized it. You know, his father was a big element in his life.
Yeah.
And I don't know the whole relationship, but I know that he was very out to impress his dad with what he did.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And did he ever have that moment? I mean, was
I don't know. I don't know.
He's from Chagrin Falls, Ohio, which is part of Cleveland, I think. I'm
absolutely,
not sure.
Absolutely.
But I think he got his comedy chops. He grew up on the Lower East Side of Chagrin Falls. That comedy section, that small comedy section where all the comedians
the Chagrinish people live. That's very Chagrinish.
I'm so glad you guys got to work with him and got to experience one of the great comics, actors of the century.
I didn't know that Roll Freddy Roll, I could get it on.
It's on YouTube, so you're not going to get one of those little residual checks.
Oh, that's all right.
For it.
That's okay.
Yeah.
But my copy I gave to my grandchildren, and they lost it, so I thought, oh, God, I just
Well, I will
it.
Tell our listeners, go to YouTube, find Roll Freddy Roll, which is a TV movie that Bill directed that's very funny. It also has Jan Murray in it, which is an extra bonus.
Yeah.
The boys. I love the boys.
And the boys. If anybody can find the boys.
Boys.
Yeah. Maybe we can make special arrangements.
Jan Murray was the funniest guy at a party. Not on TV and not on stage, but at a party. If that matters. If it means anything. If there are 40 guys at a party and Sid Caesar and Milton Berle and Jack, Jan Murray was the funniest man there.
It means a lot. Guys, we'll do. You know, we should do another episode. We should do a comedy writers episode with Friedman and Bobrick and you and Ron Clark and Arnie. We'll do a panel. What do you think? Will you guys
Great.
Come back for that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's painful, but I get it.
I must say, I've listened to the show, and I was on, I guess, the fourth
you
or
were
fifth
on with
or,
the man sitting next to you.
Yeah, well, that was the 100th.
Yes.
They did that. But
tell me about the second show, Bill.
It was very pedantic. I don't even remember. It was like I said to myself afterwards, I said, God, it's a good thing I'm out of the business because no one would hire me. I just remember I was very unimpressed.
Go back and listen and you'll reevaluate.
My first one was great. And tonight's the least I've heard him laugh.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know whether he was
12 minutes ago.
I don't know whether he was enthralled, awestruck, envious of what's been said about Tim Conway. I swear to God, one of the great things on the show is him living nothing.
Actually,
nothing.
You can hear it.
I was actually going to put a mirror in front of his mouth.
Welcome to my every week.
Oh, my God.
Thank you, boys.
Pleasure.
Bill, send my love to your daughter.
I will.
She's right here.
She's right next door.
By the way, I still have Funny Side stationery. I throw nothing away.
Wasn't that a great logo?
Yeah.
Good show.
By
John
way,
Amos.
I want to ask you a question, Bill.
Yes.
We did a show, a funny side. Gene Kelly was the host.
Right.
Gene Kelly introduced sketches. The only things he did not do were sing and dance.
That's right.
That's what... Why was that? Was there...
I don't want to do that. They know that. I'm a host, and I'll... You know, I'll do the greatest thing on that was we had a haunted house, and he was the monster, and everyone was scared, and then he said at the end, "It's over, it's all over," and he pulled the thing off, and his toupee came with it.
Oh, wow.
Oh my God.
And he said, "It really is all over."
Well, rest in peace, Tim Conway.
Yes.
I hope this was a fitting tribute with two of his oldest friends.
He isn't in heaven yet because he hasn't stopped entertaining St. Peter.
This was a treat for us, too. So, Arnie.
Thank you.
Thank you, buddy. Please give our love to Jay.
Yeah. I will.
Give us one laugh to go off with. I mean, I swear, I feel like compared to this, the second show, I was a hit.
You come here for the laughs?
No, I mean, it's just if you can't get him to laugh, then you ought to go home. You know?
Thank you, Arnie.
Right. Thank you,
Billy. Thank you, Craig Bierko.
Take care, Arn.
Okay, take care.
Gil, sign off.
And this is...
Oh, was he here?
Wake up and then sign off.
This has been Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsession.
See you next week.
I'm so glad we had this time together, just to have a laugh or sing a song. Seems we just get started, and before you know it, comes the time we have to say so long. There's a time you put aside dreaming, and a time for things you have to do, but the time I like the best is any evening I can spend a moment here with you. When the time comes and I'm feeling lonely, and I'm feeling oh so blue, I just sit back and think of you only, and the happiness still makes me feel that I belong. Seems we just get started, and before you know it, guess it's time for me to sing. So